Welcome to the 1110 Leadership Podcast, where we tackle issues at the intersection of leadership, faith, and culture. I'm your host, Rob Shields, Vice President of Strategy at 1110 Leadership, and I'm joined by my co-host, founder and CEO of 1110 Leadership, David Spickard. Proverbs 1110 lays out a bold and countercultural vision. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. We're here to ask, what does it look like practically to be this type of leader? Leaders willing to invest everything they have so that everyone around them can thrive. Join us on the journey as we lean in, listen, and learn how to become Proverbs 1110 kind of leaders. The kind of leaders that make our cities rejoice. Hey, David.
Hi, Rob.
Did I throw you off? I used two words instead of my usual one.
I don't know what you do. I just respond and I just go with it.
So, it felt different to add the hey. Honestly, it felt a little weird. I think our listeners are used to a certain cadence to our podcast, so I'm sorry for throwing everyone off.
No, that's okay. I want to hear how things are going with settling into your new house before we get rolling.
Thank you for asking. You know, it's going great. I know we mentioned on our last episode that we both love spring and we're excited about the flowers blooming. So the house that we moved into has a lot of woods in the back that are currently just all empty, right, of any leaves. So we feel the anticipation. Can't wait for spring. Can't wait to see what our backyard actually starts to look like once spring is officially sprung. We're not quite there yet, but we're excited. And it's also our backyard has a little creek in the back. So yeah. I am loving the fact that our kids can just go and explore nature and put on their rain boots and just go make a fort in the middle of the water. It's amazing.
Love that.
Yeah, it's great.
So fun.
Yeah. Well, David, I'm excited for our listeners to continue hearing from the series that we did last spring through our partnership with Denver Institute for Faith and Work. This part two of the webinar series through the Just Leadership Lab. So can you tee up for our listeners what they're in store for today as we continue this series?
Yeah, I just love thinking back to this because our partnership with Denver and those guys, our friends there, they're just on the leading edge of thinking about these issues and have created space for us to have conversations and to engage with our networks, particularly people of influence, business leaders in their world and then in our world as well, to talk through these issues. So as a result of that, we identified a couple of our key leaders that are in our Just Leadership groups, Tyler and Garrett, who lead a commercial pressure washing company, who are implementing the principles of what it means to be a just leader in their context, in their company. It's been just a privilege for us to walk with them and to see how these principles are played out and how they're just committed to it, committed to the journey and are seeing some real impacts as a result. So this episode is an interview with Tyler and Garrett.
Love that. These guys are awesome. It's an inspiring conversation. As you listen to this conversation, if you think of a leader or you are a leader yourself that would be interested in participating in one of our Just Leadership groups, we will drop that information in the show notes so that you can learn more about what that group experience is like. Our application process is currently open for the new groups that we will be starting this fall. So whether you are a leader that would like to participate or you think of someone who would really benefit from that experience that you'd like to nominate, would love to hear from you. And that information will be made available in the show notes. So without further ado, enjoy.
All right. Welcome to today's webinar. This webinar is the second and final webinar in the Just Leadership Lab series. And today's topic is developing a vision for just leadership. And I'm really excited to be part of this conversation with you all. My name is Abby Worland, and I'm the VP of Operations and Finance for Denver Institute. And a minute ago, I said that this webinar was part of the Just Leadership Lab program. And I want to tell you a little bit more about what that actually is. So over the last year or so, our team here at Denver Institute has gotten to know the amazing folks over at 1110 Leadership. And as we've gotten to know them, we've discovered a shared commitment to this idea of justice and what it means to be a just leader in our work and in the world. And so we came together to create the Just Leadership Lab, which is a collection of resources and different learning opportunities that explore that very idea. And the Just Leadership Lab has three goals. First, we want to help people understand God's heart for justice and what the Bible says about the idea of justice. Second, we want to help people navigate the tricky situations that come up in our everyday lives through the lens of justice. And our third goal is to expand our vision for what justice can and could look like. And that's the topic for today's webinar. I want to introduce two groups of people that are on the call with us today. First, I want to share with you who the team is over at 1110 Leadership. First, you're going to be hearing from David Spickard, who's the founder and CEO of 1110 Leadership, and his teammate, Rob Shields, who's the VP of Strategy for 1110. They're going to be the primary facilitators for today's call. A little bit later in today's session, you're going to meet two other amazing folks. Tyler and Garrett work for SOR, and we're going to learn much more about them and their work a little bit later, but I just wanted to give you a preview of who is going to be on the call today. So before I turn it over to David, I want to set the stage for the next hour or so. The question here on the left, I think, is really important, and I want to read it out loud and so that it's top of mind as we go into the content for today. The question we want to ask ourselves throughout today's webinar is, how can we first and foremost expand our understanding of what it looks like to be a just leader? And then how can we take that understanding and move it towards action in our own companies and communities? That's our goal for today. Today's webinar is going to have four parts. First, David is going to review God's heart for justice and the four qualities of a just leader. If you were on the last webinar, this will be a quick review for you. If you weren't on the last webinar, this will be helpful to catch you up to speed around some of the foundational understanding of what we mean by just leadership. The bulk of our time today is actually going to be spent discussing those ideas and how they can be lived out practically in our work by learning from Tyler and Garrett. So that's where we're headed. And then at the very end, we'll wrap up with some action steps that you can take to continue learning. And now I'm going to turn it over to David to take it away. Thanks.
Thank you, Abby. Welcome, everyone. It's really fantastic to have you all on the webinar with us. And I just want to reiterate how encouraging it's been for us at 1110 Leadership to partner with the Denver Institute for Faith and Work and just have this shared common mission and vision around just leadership. And we love the idea of that name, that it's just leadership. So we grow in our understanding of leadership, but we also grow in our understanding of what it means to be just and how does that impact the people that we get to lead. So in light of that, let me do a quick review of God's heart for justice and why this is important for us as leaders, and then lead to the four qualities that we've identified for just leaders. And that will then tee up our time with Tyler and Garrett. So for today, I just want to highlight Proverbs 11:10 as the real focus for our understanding of God's heart for justice. This, again, is why we named our company 1110 Leadership. It's based on this small verse in Proverbs, "When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices." Now, those of you who are with us before understand that we defined who the righteous are and what the word rejoices mean to help us understand more fully God's heart for us to have a vision for justice. The righteous are the tzadikim, which is a Hebrew word used over 200 times in the Old Testament that refers to people who steward their resources, not for themselves, but for others. They don't use their prosperity for self-enrichment, but they think about how they use their power for others. And therefore, they steward everything that they have, all of the resources and relationships and capital that they have to advance God's peace, which is this idea of shalom, another Hebrew word, which means wholeness, and justice, which is a Hebrew word, mishpat, which means everything is as it's supposed to be. And when that happens, when the righteous, the tzadikim, do that, then there's a wild party. And that word, rejoices, is the Hebrew word talos. Now, this word is extremely important because this is the only time in Scripture this word is ever used. And it is describing a wild party, people dancing in the streets, unbridled enthusiasm. And it even has war connotations where this idea that the war is over, the victory is ours, and our oppressor is gone. So Pamela, if you go to the next slide, you'll see a picture of this wild rejoicing that we've seen in various places after things have been resolved or wars are over. Top left is South Africa at the end of apartheid, VE Day, the top right at the end of World War II, bottom right is Rwanda at the end of the Civil War there, and then bottom left is 2016, when those of you who are in Denver on the call remember that the Denver Broncos won the Super Bowl. And so even for an athletic event, we are running out to the streets dancing. But this is something much deeper. When the Tzaddikim steward their resources for others, there's this sense of even those who are most marginalized in a city, instead of being bitter or resentful because the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, they instead are dancing wildly in the street, because they know that when the Tzaddikim win, everyone wins. And so as we've thought about how to pursue a vision for justice, the question that we've been asking ourselves, and when we do work with companies and leaders that we get the honor to work with, we're really trying to help us all understand what it means to be the Tzaddikim. What does it look like for us to lead in such a way that a whole community or a whole city or all the people that we have the opportunity to influence might dance wildly in the streets because we're gaining more power, more wealth, and more influence? And again, instead of them being bitter about that, they are so excited that they're beside themselves. So it's a unique picture, something that we probably even don't have a model for, of what it looks like for everybody to win. And so that leads us to the four qualities of a just leader that we've identified. Of course, there are many qualities of a just leader, but we've identified these four to provide a framework for the way we talk about this type of leadership. The first quality is to see the whole playing field, that just leaders have their head up and they see things that other people don't see. And they're able to take the time to really understand their environment and see things in themselves, see things in others, and see things in their communities that are really important to pay attention to in order to lead well. Second, they build cultural competency. They have the ability to navigate complex cultural differences in such a way that they have both the skill and the understanding to build trust across those cultural divides. And that could not be more relevant than it is today, as many of you I know are on this call, because of the unique challenges that you face trying to navigate the cultural complexity that shows up on our desk every day. Third, just leaders know how to give power away, and they understand God's power is not a dominating power, a power that lords over people. And so the redistribution of that power, giving that type of power away, doesn't really do anything. It actually just shifts dominating power to another group of people. Instead, the power that God gives us is a disarming power. It's an elevating power. It's a power that causes people to decrease so that others increase. It's a sacrificial power. And so understanding that and then knowing how to give that away in contexts that allow people to be all that they're designed to be is extremely important for leadership as a whole, but certainly if we want to be just. And then finally, just leaders take bold and courageous action. Those words bold and courageous are there for a reason, not to suggest that it has to be huge or amazing or that we're here to leave a legacy and pat ourselves on the back, but instead bold means things like it's going to be unpopular. And so we're going to have to take action where we might be misunderstood or where we feel like we're the only one. Courageous means sticking it out over the long haul and being able to withstand some of the maybe criticism or questioning that happens. Courageous means even disrupting systems that have been broken
over the years in our communities that often we overlook because we just think that injustice is only an individual responsibility problem instead of things that are baked into the way that we live our lives and systems that govern the way we operate. So those are the things that are really important for us. Those are the four qualities. And in our Just Leadership Lab experience, we have been touching on each of those in our previous webinar. We unpack these a little bit more deeply. And the other bit of content that we will provide for you guys, you'll see how we've touched on these four qualities. Today, we really want to highlight the fourth one, take bold and courageous action. Oftentimes, you know, when we're faced with injustice, we're asking the question, what do we need to do? And if you've been here with us, you know that we really encourage that not to be the first question, but really, what do we need to see? Which is why that first quality, seeing the whole playing field, is so important. But at the end of the day, if we want to be just, we can't just sit on our hands. We have to act. And just leaders don't sit on the sidelines when they see injustice. They want to lead in such a way that a whole community would rejoice, but they take bold and courageous action. So in light of that today, I'm really, really excited for us to introduce you to Tyler Graybill and Garrett Dysart, who are leaders of Southern Outdoor Restoration, or also known as SOR. Tyler is the CEO who founded the company in 2012. Garrett is the market area president, and we're going to have the opportunity to, Rob and I, interview them for a bulk of our time as we walk through their journey of what it looks like for them to understand how to be the Tzaddikim and lead within the context of their business. What I love about Tyler and Garrett, and just real quick on SOR, SOR is a property services company that serves HOAs, apartment communities, office buildings, retail shopping centers, and other properties throughout the Southeast. It's based in Raleigh, North Carolina, where we're located. They are experts in pressure washing, in gutter cleaning, window cleaning, and even Christmas lights. And not only have they built an extraordinary team and just a dynamic business, but they're making our community shine, which is awesome. And what I love about them just as leaders and watching them lead and coming alongside of them as they are on this journey is to see how much they are people first in their leadership, how much they care about people, and how both of them have the emotional intelligence to pay attention to people. They're extremely creative and innovative. They have a vision, not only for their company, but also for the property services industry, which we'll talk about today. And then just watching them together, it's been really fun for us to see how they complement each other in their leadership and how they work together and have built such a phenomenal company. Along with their leadership at SOR, Tyler is quite accomplished as a hunter and a fisherman. He also loves cooking up, preparing what he has hunted and fished for his friends. It's been fun for me to watch. And Garrett is also a hunter like Tyler, although he doesn't hunt the same things. He hunts fairways and greens and birdies as he's an outstanding golfer. So excited to have Tyler and Garrett. Thank you guys for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, David.
Thank you.
I've given a little bit of background of SOR, but if each of you can just give a little bit of personal background, and then Tyler, as you begin, what caused you to found SOR and how has it become what you dreamed it would become?
Yeah. What caused me to found SOR? So I was cut off financially the day I graduated high school. My dad said, "You're a smart, independent, hardworking young man. You can figure this out." He always talked about leading me in a way that I would one day pass the beer truck test, which is, and I asked him, like, "What's the beer truck test?" And he's like, "Well, if I get hit by a beer truck, I want you to be okay." And I was like, All right, great. And so I started power washing to make money for life and school after high school. And I swore off of it every summer. But every year I came back to it. And then I got a job in finance when I finished college. And nobody took me seriously as a 23-year-old punk kid. And I wanted to be taken seriously. And so I started with something super simple, like pressure washing. So with $2,000 in a trailer, I started pressure washing in February of 2012.
Wow. And Garrett, when did you show up?
Yeah, I came onto the scene, got connected in March 2014. And we like to refer to, we dated for a couple months before we got married. So I officially came on to our partner in July 2014.
Yeah, so you and Tyler dated. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Yeah, we sure did.
What made you want to...
Wise idea.
What made you want to jump in?
Yeah, I grew up, my father was a builder, so I kind of grew up in the small business environment and had a desire and knew, you know, kind of one day I'd love to be involved in small business and kind of have the ability to, you know, kind of drive stuff and, you know, kind of have control over your own destiny per se. And then having gotten connected with Tyler, I really was impressed with his vision for the company. I mean, we got connected through a mutual friend at our church. And when he approached me and said, hey, I got this guy named Tyler doing a pressure washing business. I was kind of like, pressure washing? Like, can you actually have a business with that? And I said, hey, let me go meet with them and sit down. We had some common connections in our network with our customer base. And I was just blown away with Tyler's vision for SOR and kind of the growth and what it could become.
As we've been talking about just leadership, you know, invariably we're then talking about justice and what does it look like for us to understand justice, which is not typically a topic for white men these days to talk about, particularly white businessmen, leaders of influence, but incredibly important for us in light of our environment. I'm curious to know your justice journey and how this has become something that you've seen as been critical to your leadership, how maybe you've grown with that as you began to recognize that was an issue and then continue to see it play out in your context.
Yeah. So my background, grew up in North Raleigh. And as I kind of reflect and discuss this topic with folks, I refer to it as I grew up in a bubble, which, you know, if anybody's familiar with North Raleigh, you can relate to that. I went to a private Christian high school. And so, you know, played sports and, you know, got exposure throughout my childhood, but really didn't have a ton of diverse friend groups, et cetera, throughout high school and college. And then when I got into the workforce and then, you know, most recently joining SOR back in 2014, I've kind of been forced, you know, have had a ton of exposure with our team and the folks that we hire, the workforce, employees. And so throughout the last 8-9+ years, it has been I think a ton of growth for me in that area when it comes to just understanding people and some of the different challenges. And by no means do I, you know, consider myself an expert at this point. It's a journey for sure. But, you know, having spent a ton of time with you and Rob and discussing these topics, it's, you know, opened my eyes to just have maybe a higher level of awareness and understanding for the, you know, employees and coworkers that I interact with on a daily basis. And it, you know, I think of it a lot of kind of like having grace and accountability and how do you balance that to understand challenges that I never had to face as a white male, either, you know, going through school, entering the workforce, different opportunities that I may have presented to me that folks that work for SOR now never had. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, so a handful of things. I feel like I kind of grew up in a similar bubble. I went to private school growing up, went to private college. I was an entrepreneur very early on in my career, and for all intents and purposes, haven't ever worked for an employer. And a lot of people have given me accolades on, you know, the success that I've had as an entrepreneur. And going into it, my dad told me, as an entrepreneur, Tyler, you're going to get paid exactly what you're worth every day. And some days that's going to feel pretty good. And some days that's going to feel pretty crappy. And I think as a result of that perspective, I initially felt like my success was a result of my hard work and just grit and determination and work ethic. And through a handful of things over the years, that perspective has shifted, that, you know, the world was made for me a bit. The only context where I'm a minority is I'm left-handed. And I, you know, give the world grief about being left-handed. I'm like, oh, the world is not made for lefties. So I only have this like fraction of a perspective to not be, you know, have the world kind of like aligned for somebody like me. And where that perspective has broadened and shifted has been through the context of initially the New City Fellows program, which is a program I participated in 2017, 2018. It was led by Catherine Alsdorf, who co-authored the book Every Good Endeavor with Tim Keller. And that was kind of my initial taste into the development of personal theology and also the integration of and faith and work. I have now gained a lot of conviction, similar to what Garrett said, that like, it's not just my success has not been just my hard work and grit. And there's a lot of paths that have a lot of headwinds for other people.
Yeah, I love that we start with the personal first. And I think kind of framing your personal justice journey. And I think now applying that to the SOR context, you talk about one of the four qualities of a just leader being cultural competency. You mentioned they having your diverse workforce that really prevented you guys from being able to keep this as an intellectual exercise, right? I mean, if you're learning about what does it look like to be just as leaders, you have ample opportunity every day to cut your teeth on these issues with your close proximity to be able to cross cultural lines, whatever they may be, whether they be race, class, gender. So I think question four, maybe start with you, Garrett. What lessons do you feel like you've learned through your role within SOR around cultural competency and kind of growing in your own cultural competence as that bubble has burst around you, right? And you kind of growing in this self-awareness and seeing the whole playing field. And what has helped shape and inform the way that you now are viewing your company culture?
Yeah. So to answer the first part, I think really the number one thing that I've learned over the years is trust. If you don't have trust, you will have no movement or no influence on folks. And you build that in a lot of different ways, obviously. And in some cases, like you're not going to be successful building that level of trust with everyone. But yeah, I mean, and that just comes with, again, you know, I'm humbled to speak on this topic because I do not view myself as an expert here, but sharing the experience is just, you've got to understand people. And the more we've grown and had different backgrounds, different experiences, just understanding the challenges that people face. And I've kind of touched on some of the balance of grace and accountability to be able to care for people well and understand where they need support to get over some hurdles, while at the same time providing the structure and accountability for them long term, whether they're at SOR for, you know, 10 years or 6 months. That will, you know, prepare them for what's next. So trust is the number one thing. And then how I view it now and how it's kind of evolved, I think, is just how one of our core values, investing in our team. So investing in people within the company. And if you understand who you're working with, who you're leading, and then you have the trust built with them, you then have the opportunity to lead them in a way that could be very impactful. And understanding what people's goals are and, you know, in life and work and how those two things kind of collide together. Yeah, I mean, it creates a unique opportunity to actually be able to influence and impact people's lives in a way that you otherwise wouldn't.
Tyler, what would you add to that?
Don't get frustrated. I think that was my initial response for a number of years, is I am one to kind of put the pieces of the puzzle in the business together and like kind of cast our vision and our define our frontier of growth. And I can model it out and I can tell the story and get people, you know, behind like what we're building and how we're going to do it and why and what it's going to look like when it's done. And then I got really frustrated when just like the messiness of people came between me and my vision. And when I did the hard work to kind of get over that initial reaction of frustration, it has really kind of like changed the way that we go about work every day and engaging with the team at SOR. And also to add to that, Garrett and I have a phrase that we use all the time, which is, it is the challenge and it is the opportunity. Like we realize that like everyone else in our shoes is facing the exact same challenges with finding, developing, retaining talent. And if everyone is facing the same challenges, then it's an opportunity for us to do it better than everybody else and gain momentum and retain people and, you know, all of the things that come with that. So those are kind of my two things, like get over the frustration, the initial frustration, and then kind of look at it from the fact that like, hey, everyone else is facing the same issues. So here's an opportunity to cut through the headwinds a little bit better than everyone else.
Yeah, I want to camp out here a little bit because I think these are issues that we face with the companies that we're working with, regardless of whether they're thinking about being just or not. The trust piece is so huge. And, you know, having people get it, like the people that we lead, get what's in our mind and own it as much as we do. I want you to think about specific examples where building that trust was just extremely difficult. Or I know you guys have contexts where you are coming in and people looking at you and they see some of the cultural divide dynamics that within your company and going, why would I trust you as a leader? And you don't know me. You don't know where I'm from. You don't know what I have to go through. Why should I trust you? Why should I work for you? You're just making money off of me. Like how have you guys navigated that? And is there a specific example that you could speak to generally that has really helped you understand what you truly need to do to build trust and what you truly need to do to help your people get where you want to go with the company?
I think Garrett, you can take that. I mean, you were talking about how building trust is kind of like the absolute step one. So like, you know, and you do an excellent job of that. So, you know, a little bit of like, how do you go about building trust?
Yeah, I don't have any specific example that comes to mind per se, but I think it's consistency with how you treat people on a day-to-day basis. And I think over time you earn the trust with them. And again, we have not succeeded in, you know, every employee, every technician that has come through. Like this is not a, you know, we're 10 out of 10. There's a lot of folks that come through the door and we are not able to build that connection. And therefore, you know, it's tough for us to get them on board with what we are doing and attempting to do here at SOR. But I think these success stories that have come out of it is, you give a lot of transparency or try to into the whys on what we're doing. We really want people, employees, coworkers to understand what the vision is, why we've set things up, what our core values are, and, you know, treat people with dignity and respect and hold people accountable to that. And when somebody breaches that, you handle it and you don't let it, you know, kind of get brushed under the rug. And that's, I mean, I just think the consistency piece of it and just genuinely caring for people. It's very surprising how many folks we interview and hire where they have had just terrible experiences in, you know, not necessarily our specific industry, but in, you know, kind of the more blue collar workforce, other companies that, you know, have similar teams like we do. And they quickly pick up on our care for people. And so, yeah, I know it's not super specific with an example there, but
yeah, that's okay. Yeah. And before I ask you how these lessons have impacted you guys personally, Tyler, I'm curious to have you answer just your big idea around your vision for the property services industry and how you hope to have SOR be a model for that. What's motivating you around that? First, what's your vision? Like, what are the components of what you're hoping to do within the industry? And then what's motivated that?
Yeah, I think the essence of the vision is that Garrett and I are really excited about creating opportunity for people in the context of a relatively kind of simple and pedestrian business, right? Like, there's nothing sexy about what we're doing at SOR in terms of pressure washing. Things get dirty and we spray some chemicals and some water on them to clean them off. Like, you know, we're not like developing some new technology to cure cancer. And so part of it is just,
but you're belaying off of big buildings. Like, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. There's
personally terrified of heights. So, I mean, you guys are heroes in my book, cause I'm not getting up on that ladder, you know, there's no way.
Yeah. Well, my dad's in the rock climbing business, so I feel pretty comfortable working off of ropes. So we want to create a bunch of opportunity for people, and we want to do that in a way that where everyone is aligned to win. And we had that thought and that concept prior to ever meeting you guys and, you know, hearing about kind of your vision for justice in the context of business leadership. But you do that through what Garrett was talking about, like transparency of information. So over the last couple of years, we have been much more open book with the whole team on how jobs are priced and how jobs are scheduled and where the expenses flow, where labor fits into all of that. And then most recently, we implemented a program that ties comp to revenue and efficiency, which has been a really, really cool thing. To incentivize efficiency. And we've kind of changed the way that we talk about profitability as well. Profitability is not, as you mentioned, David, you know, like what's left over that just goes into our pocket. Profitability measures the efficiency of value creation, right? Because like the work that we do has certain amount of value in the market, right? Like you can, power washing concrete is X amount of cents per square foot. And like, that's what the market value is. You know, a gallon of milk is a few bucks. Like that's what it is. And the profitability comes from delivering that value super efficiently. And so if we get people on board with that and then tie comp to results, it's a much better process than tying comp to time, which is like what our industry has done. And so our big, big vision is to really raise the bar for the people performing property services work in the ways that they are empowered, which ideally translates into the ways that projects are experienced for property managers. And we want to do so in such a compelling way that it forces our competition to treat employees in a similar way that we are, because that's how the big guys are doing it. And so in order to achieve that, you know, I just kind of alluded to it, we need scale. We need, you know, a regional presence at least to be able to do that in a meaningful way.
Love that. How has this impacted not just the way you guys have engaged your employees, but also the ways you have engaged your clients? Has it changed the way you interact with them? Are you motivated in any different way? Or have you seen unique outcomes as a result of the way you engage with your customers?
I'll take it for the first one. I'm sure Garrett's got thoughts on this. One of the coolest things that I experienced maybe a year and a half ago is the result of what we would say is put the limelight on the operations team, right? So like, it's easy to put the limelight on the sales team. You know, that's what society would say, like, hey, that these are the guys that are making it rain out there. But it's been fun to try to put the limelight on the operations team. So we send a project summary report that has the names and faces of the people who completed the work on every single job, whether it's a $100 job or a $100,000 job. It has the names and faces of the people performing the work. And we send their comments. So like the progress updates that they write from the technicians, that's what goes to the clients. And this was really neat. I sent an upcoming project reminder to a property manager a couple of years ago. Hey, 2 weeks out, we're going to be cleaning the curbs at, you know, some office park in Cary. And she said, sounds great. I can't wait to have Tarek back on our property. And I was like, that is so cool that you know who Tarek is, because these guys are working at night. They're in an office park, so they don't even start until 9 o'clock at night. So they're literally like cleaning fairies. Nick, nobody sees them. Nobody knows who they are. And yet Audrey knew who Tarek was. And so I think that's one really, really cool thing that we've done, is to just put the limelight on the guys who are like doing the real work.
Let's also, this is a great question from Sandy. She says, how would a just confrontation with one of your employees look like if their commitment to the organization does not play out in action, but only in words? So they might say they're on board, but they're not acting it out. And so how do you confront them well?
Happy to take the first stab at this one. So
he's better at this than I am.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to deal with this probably a touch more often than Tyler has over the years. But I've run the ops team for a number of years. So we're all about transparency and being pretty straight up with how folks are performing. We've been really focused on producing KPIs and metrics for different roles that define success. We want it to be very objective. We don't want it to be subjective. We don't want a teacher's pet or favoritism. And we measure all that across the team. And so if somebody's talking the talk, but not performing at the levels, we can have a, you know, fairly easy, transparent conversation with, you know, hey, everybody's up here and you're down here. And we want to give them the opportunity to improve. So we utilize PIPs, performance improvement plans, a lot for that. We'll, you know, kind of cater that to each case. We could put 2 weeks on it, a month, 3 months, but give very clear objectives with them on what we expect from a performance standpoint, and then kind of hold them to that. And again, it's a fine line, and there's no perfect way, but people want to know what is success. They want to have success defined for them, what is expected of me. And so if we do a good job with that and somebody still does not meet that, then it's a pretty easy conversation. We've been very transparent with them on what the expectations are.
Tyler, I'll direct this one to you. We started on the personal justice journey, kind of went inward on SOR, kind of deep dive on how you guys are trying to wrestle through applying these qualities of a just leader and these principles within the company culture. But shifting back to personal for a second, how are these qualities kind of pouring back over into your life outside of your vocation? You know, because I think that's one of the walls that we want to kind of try to knock down a little bit, and painting a picture of this is really just stuff we're trying to model in all of life. And so how have you taken maybe some of these lessons that you've learned on the job, quote unquote, and apply them outside of your work context in the rest of your life?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm still developing the answer on that. So I think I'll be doing that for a long time. I think a lot of the conversations that I've had with my wife and I recently have been in the context of parenting. Right? Like, all right, hey, you know, we're raising now 3 little kids. And how do we do that in a way that teaches them that like the world may feel like it's set up for them, but you know, that everything is not as easy as it is for us, as it is for everybody else. So I like just throwing wrenches at my kids and making life difficult for them. And my dad did that for me. I remember
metaphorical wrenches. Yeah.
Hey, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball, right? Yeah, I mean, I distinctly remember my dad just like kind of like showing me how the world worked. Said, hey, Dad, can we have Chinese food for dinner tonight? He said, yeah, sure. And he said, there's a takeout menu in like this drawer of this cabinet. I think I was like 7 years old. And he said, there's a notepad and you need to go around and ask everyone in the family what they want from the menu. You need to write it down. There's a phone number on there that you go get the phone. You call the people, you tell them who you are. You tell them the order, ask them what time it's going to be picked up. And I will drive you to wherever you, you know, order from. I'll give you a card. You go pay. And so he just like that's not a difficult thing. That didn't make life difficult for me, like a little bit harder to get my dinner that night than otherwise. But I think like getting exposure to the way the world works for our kids is a really important thing. And I think like now having broader context on like how the world works, not just for me, but for others, is going to hopefully improve the way that we raise kids here in the, over the next decade.
Anything to add, Garrett?
Yeah. You know, to kind of piggyback off Tyler, it's a journey, obviously, like work in process. I think having, you know, spent time with the both of you for the last couple of years, it's challenged me to, I think, redefine success in kind of life, quote unquote. It's so easy for us to kind of look at work and define success on metrics, performance, whatever that may be. But kind of personally, just looking at how do I spend my time? How do I spend my money? You know, the resources that, you know, God's kind of gifted me and my family. And again, I don't, you know, necessarily have like the plan per se, but it certainly has gotten a lot of, you know, reflection with that. And a touch more intentionality. I think it's been affirming to feel a touch more generous than I did a couple years ago, probably, as, you know, kind of redefining success.
I want to thank you guys. I'm going to turn it over to Abby for one final question. Just love that this is a process. You know, none of us are experts on this road, and that, but we're on the road, right? And there's a lot to learn, a lot we make mistakes with, and a lot of things that we get to see that we never would have expected that we get to see. And I know you guys have been doing that, and it's been fun to watch you do that. For those on the call, one of the things that we're going to do as a next step for the webinar is to provide you a link to a Just Leadership assessment that we just came out with to help you assess how well you're thinking about what it looks like to be the righteous, the tzedakim, and to ask just some questions that are based on leadership as well as how we're thinking about what it looks like to be just. And it can also give you a sense of how well the context is that you're working in to help you be just. So we just encourage you to fill that out. It will only take about 10 or 15 minutes. And if you have questions about it, certainly we can follow up with you. But it's something we're testing, and we'd love your comments on it too, as you take it. If you have an opportunity to send an email to us and just want to give us some feedback on it, we'd love to get your feedback. Abby?
That's great. I don't think we have time for any more questions for Garrett and Tyler, but thank you both so much for being here today. I know that I'm leaving with a lot of ideas, just a few that I am leaving with. Your conversation about transparency as a tool for just leadership and that idea of being transparent about what's expected, about the metrics, about compensation, like transparent communication and transparent expectations is a way of being a just leader for your people. And I really want to think a little bit more about what that could look like in my own job. The other thing, Tyler, I think this is something that you said just a few minutes ago, was that idea of making our team known and putting their pictures and their names on those things that you send to your clients. That idea of visibility of your workers, of your team, is also a form of being a tremendous people leader and giving away some of that visibility and recognition that some people are more apt to get on the team than others, and by sharing that widely. And I just really appreciate your comments on that. So you've given me much to think about, and I would love to hear before you, if you're on the webinar right now, before you sign off in the chat, if you would just put an idea that you are taking away with you from today's conversation, a thought, a quote from the conversation, something you'd like to try or do in your own work, please put that in the chat before you leave today's webinar. And I just really appreciate you all being here and being part of this conversation today.
Thank you, Tyler and Garrett. Abby, just our partnership is really fantastic.
There are a lot of resources that we're putting out there too. Feel free to forward those, you know, to friends and colleagues that you think would be interested. We just want to keep the conversation going and learn from each other as we take this together. So thank you so much. You guys have a great rest of the day.
To learn more about 1110 Leadership, visit our website at 1110leadership.com. That's the numerals 1-1, then spelled out T-E-N, leadership.com. That's 1-1, T-E-N, leadership.com. There you'll find more resources to equip you on the journey of becoming an 1110 leader. You can also get connected to our growing leadership network. If you've enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. To help others find us, you can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.